following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9.
Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you.
Listeners to this radio show should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the mutual fund, variable annuity, and variable annuity subaccounts. To obtain a prospectus, you may contact Friedman Financial or your financial advisor. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making a potential investment.
And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall and just above the soon, really soon to be opening Daniela's restaurant. Hope you're all doing well. It is the middle, we're approaching the middle part of the summer. It's Columbus Day weekend. Usually this is one of those super busy weekends, especially at the Topsfield Fair. But unfortunately that didn't happen. And man, what a great week we would have had for the Topsfield Fair. As many of you know, I've been running the B'nai B'rith booth at the fair for the past 10 years. I've been working there since I was 13. But the big joke was, if you wanted to know when it was going to rain in October, you generally looked at the week of the Topsfield Fair because we seemed to have more rain outs than anything else. But man, what a great week this would have been. So I'm really missing the fair. We will be back again next year with our booth and so many other booths there. Jamie O'Brien does such a fabulous job managing so many people and keeping everybody safe at the fair that I can't wait for it to restart up again. Well, last week, if you listened to the show, you probably have figured out that I was taping the show because I certainly would have mentioned last Sunday that the president had contracted the coronavirus. Who had known? It was, in fact, I had taped the show last week on Wednesday. And so that was the day after the debate. So we spent a lot of time talking about the debate and the mess that that absolutely was. But who would have thought that the story would have disappeared from the debate? No one's even talking about the debate. No one was talking about the president's tax returns. Everybody's talking about COVID-19 and how the president had contracted the virus. So as you may be able to tell, again, I'm taping this show again a few days before today. So it looks like the president is starting to clear some high watermarks and is going to be back in business pretty soon. Hopefully, perhaps even by Sunday, he may be able to get out and start making some personal visits. But of course, we will see if the presidential debate happens on the 15th of October. I think they're going to go forward with it. I actually think it's important that all the debates go forward. But I also think that this election, despite what we here in Massachusetts read, see posts and polls and all that kind of stuff, this election's far from over. There's a lot of things that can happen in the next 20 to 30 days. You know, those of you that have voted have already submitted your mail-in vote. I'm sure you felt very good about the candidate you selected, and I'm sure you'll still stand behind that candidate 2 or 3 weeks from now or 4 weeks from now, whenever the election is. But there's a lot of people that are still on the fence. It can hinge on a decision. It can hinge on a stimulus check. It could hinge on your ability to get back to work, lower taxes, immigration. It could be a number of things. But one of the things that we do know is that historically, and it's just as a reminder, and right now the polls certainly suggest that Joe Biden is going to win this election. And in fact, the market, if you really look deeper into the market, if you dig deeper, you'll see that the market is telling us that they anticipate that Joe Biden will win the presidential nod. And that's evidenced by certain stocks that have started to see a little bit of an uptick. Certainly stocks that are more ESG focused, environmentally conscious, those stocks are doing well. But we will see what happens. You never know, because if you look back, and I know nobody wants to hear this, and it's not frequently reported, but 4 years ago on this week, the number of points back that Donald Trump was against Hillary Clinton was the same as what it is against Joe Biden. Now, I do think we're in a different environment here. I think people are a bit more focused on how they want to vote this year. And I think the number of voters that will show up to the polls or through mail-in ballot or absentee ballot will be greater than ever before. And I think that's wonderful. I mean, we all have the right to vote. It's our patriotic duty to do so. But let's be very careful about believing in all of the polls that you follow. I oftentimes find it funny. I flip between MSNBC, CNN, and Fox News all the time. When I go home at night, I'm watching all the shows, flipping back and forth. People are posting polling numbers. And what's interesting is you see with the big number that Biden might be leading Trump in this state or in this district or this area. But then you have to look a little bit further down to the smaller print. And that's what I'm always reading. And the smaller print tells you how many people they've asked. And generally, that number of people that are making up the survey results might be 500 people. And is 500 people representative enough of a community to give you confidence in the surveys? So I caution you heavily to continue to show up to the polls. If you have a candidate that you believe should win or that you want to have win, go to the polls. Despite what the polls are showing that says someone's leading by a certain amount, and you say, oh, if they're up that much, they don't need my vote, go to the polls. You need to show up. The other thing we know is that in 2016, as most people headed to Election Day, there was this strong assumption that Hillary Clinton was going to win the election. In fact, I remember listening, I think it was the day before Election Day, and Maddie in the Morning on Kiss 108 was interviewing Hillary Clinton. And he was asking her, have you and Bill decided what you're going to call him if you become president? Will be he be the first man, the first husband, the first what? And they were joking about it. I don't think anybody, at least certainly in the circles of Massachusetts, had a real strong feeling that Donald Trump had any chance of winning this election. They thought it was certainly going to go in Hillary Clinton's favor. And when you look at what the markets did, you know, the markets had stabilized quite a bit. They said Hillary was going to win this election. It was going to be all over. And then all of a sudden, as we approached 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, there was that potential sense that there could be an upset here. And an upset it was. And as Donald Trump is being announced as the next president of the United States, in the lower right-hand corner of your screen, you saw the futures market on the stock market. And what did they do? They plummeted. They dropped 700-800 points. Now, remember, back then, the stock market was, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was around 17,000. And it dropped 800-900 points. That's a significant move. That's more than 5%. That's a big move. And then the next day, reality set in that Donald Trump was going to be the president of the United States for the next 4 years. And maybe more level heads started to prevail. People started to think a bit rationally. And all of a sudden, the market the next day started to take off and head in the other direction. And I think we all know what happened over the next 4 years that followed. Even with the pullback that we've seen due to the coronavirus, the market sits somewhere at, 27, 28,000. When the president took over in 2016, it was at 17,000. So we've seen a nice run-up. In fact, let me put that into perspective for you. It's real important to know this. In the past 10 years, even through President Obama and with President Trump, in the past 10 years, the S&P 500 has dropped more than 10% on 8 different occasions. 10%, meaning the value of the stock market, the S&P 500 has dropped 10%. Now, what is the S&P 500? The S&P 500 is an index, a market-weighted index of 500 of the largest stocks that trade on the exchange. So over the past 10 years, the S&P 500 has dropped more than 10% on 8 different occasions. On 2 of these cases, it wasn't just 10%, it was closer to 20%. And this year, of course, it's dropped 30 or more percent. Now, over the same period of time, the market has nearly tripled in value. But the long term is irrelevant if you have a problem in the short term. And what I mean by that is that if you react to changes, to trading, to activity, to speculating when the markets pull back and you get out, you're going to miss the turnaround whenever that happens. And I would encourage you to be very, very rational over the next 4 weeks, though it's going to be very difficult to do that. We're going to hear lots of stories. The press is going to get nasty. The two candidates running for office are going to make this very personal. It'll be up to you to determine what is lies, what is the truth, what is rhetoric, what is intended to influence you. You got to think that all through, but you also have to think about your portfolio. And the market may react to a lot of things that will happen over the next 4 weeks. I want you to be like Rip Van Winkle. I don't want you making changes. I want you to sleep through it if you can. Because long term, the stock market delivers. Long term, investors are served well. And trying to speculate, trying to guess on tax policy, regulation, government supervision, estate issues, taxes, everything, you will drive yourself crazy. Because we're in this for the long haul, folks. And as long as you have a plan structured properly, you will do just fine. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, I want to talk to you about some items that I have been following through a couple reports that I get from a company called Natixis. They have this thing called a coronavirus dashboard, which I've been following since March, which really tracks what's been going on and which been going on with the virus, how it's been impacting communities and how it's been impacting the world. And I learn a lot from the data that's provided here rather than just the headlines that appear on the news. In addition, they provide us with an economic activity tracker to give us a sense as to how things are moving along here in America and around the world. I think you'll find it interesting. We'll share that with you when we get back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
This is Mark Friedman, president of Friedman Financial and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Each week, I try to provide listeners with financial advice in a language you can understand. And much of my advice comes from real-life situations that happens in my office, Friedman Financial, each and every day. You see, at Friedman Financial, we help individuals and families create smart strategies for spending money in retirement. Our approach is committed to placing your interests first. And best of all, Friedman Financial is independent, and we're a fee-based financial planning and investment management firm. We're absolutely committed to helping you get your financial house in order. When you're ready to get serious about your financial planning needs, give us a call at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108, or on the web at friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
It's not about the money, money, money. We don't need your money, money, money.
Come on, at the end of the day, it is all about the money. When you have the money, you can spend it. When you don't have the money, you wish you had it. My name is Mark Friedman. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. It's another Sunday, 8 to 9 a.m. We are here providing you with financial advice in a language you can understand. Man, we got a lot of things to talk about when it comes to money, whether it's your job, whether it's the expenses that you have, whether it's living in the community. It is about the money, folks. Now, money can't buy happiness. People will say money can buy happiness. You know, there's a lot of people that are very happy that don't have money. But when you have money and you have control of your money, you can be happier. And I want to make sure that you're being smart with your money. That's what we do here. That's what we do here on this radio show each and every Sunday. Look, my name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Since 1968, yeah, that's 52 years ago, we have been providing financial planning and investment management advice to individuals and families all around the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the Southern New Hampshire area. I didn't start the firm in 68. My father did. He transitioned the firm to me. Well, we started to transition it, I guess, in 1991 when I joined the firm. But he ultimately retired in 2007, and he's doing just fine down in Florida, enjoying retirement. But I took over the firm then in 07. I had my business partner, Marion Gilman, become part of our team. And between the two of us, we run Friedman Financial along with a staff of four others. No, we're not a huge, huge office. We're not an enterprise. And that's on purpose. We've decided to keep our business personal and customized. And when we can, in person. But, you know, with the masks and with COVID right now, Zoom has been the way to go. We've used the phone. We've used email. We've met a few people with a mask on, and we are starting to open our office to meet some folks here at the office with masks being on. But it's not the greatest. But some people really want it, and we want to accommodate you as best we can. Soon, someday soon, the time will come when the masks will be gone and we can meet face-to-face again. And I really look forward to those days. You know, people ask us all the time, Mark, what does your client base look like? Well, I'll be very honest. We've done a lot of analysis and slicing and dicing of what our client base looks like, and it has evolved over the years. But right now, our typical client is over the age of 55, and we have 450 households that we serve. They're over the age of 55, and they consider themselves, though they wouldn't know if this would be the title that we'd call them, part of the mass affluent community, the vast majority of them. Now, some are more affluent, of course, and some aren't as affluent, but the vast majority fall into the mass affluent community. Let me see if this describes you. Generally, during their best working years, they've earned somewhere between $125,000 to $300,000 a year. They've been married to their spouse for 20 years or more. They have decent relationships with their kids. They generally have a mortgage on their house. Maybe it's paid off, but they don't carry that much more debt. They don't carry student loans anymore or credit cards or automobile loan debt. They like to help out their kids when they can. In fact, they probably helped out their kids paying college costs. And in some cases, the kids have been responsible for some of the expenses, but not all. They put money in their 401k plan or their 403b. They work hard. They've tried to be involved in their community. They love the region where they live. They like to travel, but most of their travel has been pretty local. Sometimes they will go on a trip periodically over to Europe or to Hawaii or maybe even to the Far East. They like to go to Florida sometimes. And like I said, they've got good relationships with their kids. When it comes to charitable giving, and a lot of these firms talk about charitable giving, charity to them is mostly at home. Charity is for the children. Charity is making sure that when they pass on, their kids get something. They're not necessarily looking to leave a large sum of money to a not-for-profit or charitable organization in their will, though they may be generous over the course of their lifetime. But when they retire, they say to themselves, you know, the life I'd want to live says I want to spend somewhere between $6,000 and $12,000 a month spending. Now, that's after tax. Some of that money will come from Social Security. Some of it will come from a pension. But a large portion of it will come from distributions from the investment accounts that they've accumulated all of their lives. It might be their IRAs, their 401ks, an investment account, an annuity, cash value of life insurance policy, inheritance that they have received. They might even own a second home. But they don't consider themselves wealthy. They don't consider themselves super rich. In fact, many of them actually consider themselves middle class. But based upon all the classifications that I just set up to you, you're considered mass affluent. That's the category that you fall into, and that is the sweet spot of the clients that we serve. Many of those clients come to us after having relationships with a variety of different types of financial professionals. They say to us, you know, Mark, I had an insurance guy, I had a couple investment guys, I invested some money with my brother-in-law, I got money over at my 401k, I still have old 401k plans left at work, I'm not sure what to do when my wife retires as a teacher, she has pension choices to make, my kids might need some help. And they say, you know, I don't feel like I can go to any of the financial professionals that I was working with and give them the big picture of my life and have them look at it through a much larger lens and give me guidance that places my interests first with an understanding of where everything is and what everything is worth. And I've heard, Mark, from people that I work with, people that have worked with you, people that listen to the radio show, that that's what you do. And that's exactly what we do. Yes, we invest a lot of money for clients. In fact, it's close to $500 million right now, if you add up all the money that we're investing for our clients. But that's part two. Part one starts with making sure that your financial house is in order, making sure that when it's time to make financial decisions, you're going to make smart ones. And when it's time to retire, you're going to know the right places from which to draw money so that you get the best bang for your buck and pay the least amount of taxes. Because still, that is a patriotic thing to do. When I last left you, I told you I wanted to share a report that I get on a regular basis from a company called Natixis. Natixis is a mutual fund. It's actually a big mutual fund company, and they represent a lot of different fund firms. Maybe you've heard of the Oakmark Funds or the Loomis Sales Funds or the Gateway Fund, so many other funds. They're kind of a conglomerate. They're based out of Paris, France, but they have offices here in the United States. And they provide us with not only research and information about their funds, but they provide me as an advisor a great tool to help me understand what's going on in the world beyond the news clips and headlines and Instagram feeds that you and I might get. So two reports that come to me on a regular basis, one is called the Coronavirus Dashboard. The other is called the Economic Activity Tracker. And in the Coronavirus Dashboard, it's a 30-page report that I get. And here's what they help us with every single week. They said, here are bulleted issues that are going on in the United States, in developed economies, meaning international companies outside of the United States that are considered developed countries, and what's going on in emerging economies. What are the issues that these segments are having to deal with? And what, as a firm at Natixis, what are we watching to help us understand the issue that's out there to determine it properly? And then what are some of the bullet points? What are some of the talking points that we can assist you with so you can convey to your clients what's going on? So let me give you an example. One of the things that they talk about is the national curve, we're talking about the coronavirus curve, is beginning to start to move, as we all know, higher again after a steady decline through July and August. They ask, the other issues we're looking at is, what does reopening look like and how far can we normalize? Will winter months limit normalization and increase contagion? Can asymptomatic people spread the virus? And is adherence to prevention measures, masks, becoming politicized? So those are the issues. And so here are the things that they're watching right now. Well, they are watching that there is now a positive test rate. It's moving lower again after an increase in July and August. There's an additional fiscal response. State and local aid is desperately needed right now. There's the ability of our healthcare system to handle cases. Can we do it? Are we able to manage the hospitalizations? And are we able to focus less on case counts and more on healthcare capacity? Those are questions that they ask, and here are some of the comments for us to consider. They're saying, look, shifting demographics to a younger age group, particularly college-aged, likely reduces mortality and severity. But does this lead to increased spread in other ages? These are the talking points that are out there. While a second wave of lockdowns is unlikely, measures will likely be targeted and be less draconian than the original lockdowns. Further, outbreaks drive home reality. They're increasing adherence to preventative measures and fiscal relief as it relates to that. We know more is needed, but the execution hurdles to exist to disperse the funds, as we've certainly seen this week, as President Trump initially said, you know, we're not going to play in the stimulus game. But in fact, he wanted to focus on something a little bit more targeted. And I think what's kind of interesting with his approach, though, like I said, I'm taping this this show a couple days before you're listening to it, so things could have changed. But while President Trump has told Mitch McConnell to back off on the stimulus conversation, what I believe he's saying is that we don't need to build to create a giant package to make this successful. Perhaps we need to break it down in parts and focus on the areas where we need to identify the most important things. Because the place that we're stuck on right now in the economy, in the stimulus package, is the amount of money to provide to state and local governments to help them with their budget needs. Some of these states, as we all well know, were not managing their finances all that well. And even without COVID, they weren't doing so great. But now with COVID, it's been exacerbated. Now, those issues still need to be contended with. Absolutely true. But would a special bailout to airlines help? Would checks to Americans in this country help? We all know, and we've all talked about the challenges of the unemployment benefit of $600 a week and how that really didn't make much sense. You know, there were people who were refusing to go back to work because they were making more money collecting unemployment. That probably wasn't the smartest thing to do. So perhaps it makes sense to break down all of the items in the stimulus program and focus on the ones that need to be prioritized first. I don't know that that's the right way to go about doing it, but I think that's the intent that's happening right now. And we will see what happens, because with an election, if Joe Biden wins this election, his approach towards a stimulus plan might be totally different than what Donald Trump's is. And on top of that, if there is a sweep of the House, the Senate, and the White House, there could be a totally different perspective on how best we deal with our economy, with our Americans, with our situation. It could be a whole different paradigm shift. I think there's no question about it that if the Democrats win the House, the Senate, and the White House, taxes will go up. I don't think there's any question. I don't think anybody would argue that. And so I think it's important that it's less important, I believe, who wins the White House than it is who wins the Senate. Because if we can keep a balance between the Congress and between the House of Representatives and the Senate, have the Democrats hold the House of Representatives, have the Republicans hold the Senate, we can have dialogue. But if there's a clean sweep, I don't think that's healthy moving forward. We need to take a quick break. But when we get back, I want to share some more things from this coronavirus dashboard, as well as open your eyes to this economic activity tracker that I've been following. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Hi, this is Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial. For more than 50 years, we've been providing individuals and families on the North Shore and Merrimack Valley with financial advice in a language you can understand. As each of us struggle to find answers in this uncertain environment, we're continuing to communicate with our clients in a variety of ways. Our weekly newsletter, our video town hall, our client teleconferences, and periodic phone calls continue to offer ways to address clients' questions despite remaining physically distant. If you're feeling alone and searching for rational advice during these emotional times, perhaps Friedman Financial can provide the comfort that you need. Give us a call at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or visit us at friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Friedman Financial, financial advice in a language you can understand.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial. Money, 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 money,
money, money, money. Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the Nordstrom Mall and just above Daniela's restaurant, soon to be opening in the next week or two, I hope, on 41 Cross Street in Peabody. I'm just upstairs from Daniela's. When you go there, and they're going to open up soon. I know they're going to open up soon. The restaurant looks fabulous downstairs. I've walked through it. Can't wait till the doors, till they announce the opening day. But when you swing by the restaurant, look up. You'll see it's Friedman Financial. That's where we are. And we would love to meet with you, love to talk with you, love to see if we could provide you with some financial advice in a language you can understand. Because financial planning is tough. Investing is hard enough. Trying to invest your money is hard enough, but trying to do it in the scope of your overall financial situation is even more challenging, because everybody out there has an opinion for you. Everybody wants to offer you their peace of mind and the strategies that they've used. But you know what? Nobody knows your whole situation. I've met thousands of families, and I will tell you, I cannot say that I have seen it all, because every day I think I have, there's always something else. There's always another story, always another situation. Folks, if now is the time for you to get serious about your financial planning, we would be happy to meet with you. We are meeting some clients in person in the office on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. We got to wear masks. But if you'd prefer, and I'd rather prefer right now too, until we come up with some kind of a vaccine, we can meet via Zoom. We can see each other across the screens. We can talk. I can share lots of stuff on my screen. I can email you. I can call you on the phone. I can drop stuff off in your mailbox, whatever it might be. It's funny. That's what we do. I mean, we try to make the relationship we have with our clients personal. In fact, one of the big things that happens when we run into challenging situations economically is financial advisors act in a variety of different ways. Some folks say, wow, this is an opportunity for us to revamp someone's portfolio, give them opportunities to buy things that are low and perhaps sell some stuff that you always wanted to get rid of. That's not the approach we take at Friedman Financial. Generally, the trading activity that goes on in our office for our clients is minimal. It rarely happens. I mean, we will make a trade or two a year, not a day, not a week, not a month, a year, because we're buying long-term investments. Look, when you went to invest on your own, you probably looked at historical charts that said, how did this fund or investment do over the past 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? Well, if you're using that as a historical reference, why would you want to get out after 2 or 3 years? There's got to be reasons why we get out if we need to, but not simply because an investment is having a tough time during a period of time. Like right now, for instance. Right now, growth investments are far outperforming value investments. And many people will come to us and they say, Mark, when I invest, you know, I want to be conservative. I want to have dividend paying investments, stuff that pays an income. And that's all great. And dividend paying investments are wonderful to have in your portfolio. But if that's all you have, you missed out on the run up. Because believe it or not, generally, value investments, that's investments that can oftentimes pay a dividend, are actually down for the year. Growth investments are up. But do you switch from growth to value, from value to growth? No. Can't play that game, because that's a loser's bet. You got to have a little in both and understand that there is going to be periods of time when some investments do better than others. That same applies to large investments, mid-sized investments, small investments. It applies to bonds. It implies to a lot of different types of investments. And the way we continue to communicate this with our clients is, of course, beyond the radio show that we make available here to all of our listeners and all of the community. And you can podcast these as well. You can find this on iTunes. You can look up Dollars and Cents. You can go to the North Shore 104.9 website and find under podcasts or weekend shows. You'll see some of the historical shows that we've done. But our clients are participants in what I call 68 points of communication a year. 68 points of communication, Mark. How do you do that? Well, the first way we do it, and we make it available to you too as a listener, is our weekly newsletter. There's 52 points of the 68 points of contact. Do you want to receive our free weekly newsletter? It lands in your inbox every Friday at 10:30 in the morning. All you need to do is go to my website, friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. You go to the bottom of any page on the website. You put in your name, your email address. You want to send me a message, there's plenty of room in a little text box there that you can send a message if you want. But if not, just hit send and boom. You will join the 7,000 plus people who have signed up to take our newsletter, a newsletter that we write ourselves and we've been producing since March of 2009. Yeah, that's right. 11 years, 52 consecutive weeks. You can do the math. It's a lot of newsletters, and each one is designed by us. So if you'd like that, that's 52 ways that we reach you and also reach our clients. In addition to that, our clients receive 12 monthly statements. Now, some of them don't want it in the mail. We can make it available to you online. It can be emailed to you. So there's 12 points of communication. So 12 plus 52, well, we're already at 64. So how do we fill in the other four or more, and it's usually more than that, to get up to our 68 points of communication? Well, we generally have 1 to 2 meetings with our clients a year. Now, we prefer, of course, to do this in person, But right now we're doing it through Zoom. We are doing it over the phone. We're exchanging emails. And we're happy to make those arrangements. And if you want to work with us as a client, we're happy to schedule a free initial consultation for you. We'll send an information kit out to you to let you know how we work. If you'd like to talk with me first before you endeavor into filling out those forms, I'm always available to talk with you, happy to chat. And we'd love to meet with you if you're a right fit for the office and we're a right fit for you. This has to work. You see, clients don't come to Friedman Financial with the expectation of saying it's a one and done experience, like going out to buy a camcorder or a big screen TV. This is an experience where you're connecting with a trusted advisor who will provide you rational and unbiased guidance on issues pertaining to everything in your financial life. That goes well beyond your investment portfolio. Perhaps you're wondering whether you have the right amount of life insurance. Perhaps you're wondering if now is the time to refinance your home, how best to pay for your children's education, pay for a wedding, help mom and dad that might be going into a nursing home or to Brooksby Village, how you might choose your pension option, when to take Social Security, or when's the best time to sign up for Medicare. That and so much more. That's what a financial planner does. That's what we do. We're certified financial planners. We are fiduciaries. We place your interests first. So I'm talking about the 68 points of communication, 52 weekly newsletters, 12 monthly statements, that's 64, two client meetings, that gets us to 66. We host events for our clients. I know many people send you invitations for a free dinner or a free lunch to hear about this idea or that idea. I got out of that business a long time ago because we know that the most important people in our business are the clients that we already have. And I want to make them smarter. I want to give them education. I want to make sure that they are getting value for what they pay us. Now, our clients are always welcome to invite their friends, neighbors, and relatives, but we hold several events over the course of the year. In addition to that, we'll send out periodic emails. We'll have phone call interactions. We'll do what I call random acts of kindness to some folks. And that's how we get to our 68 points of communication over the course of the year. One of the things that we did and we also made available to many of the listeners here on this show was our weekly town halls that we started back in March. When the market fell, we were hosting a Thursday video town hall. Now, many of you tuned into this as well, and over 100 people would sign in on a Thursday at 4 o'clock. Now, we've stopped doing those. We may do another one in a couple of weeks. We had gone from every week to then every other week, then we went to every month. And so we're getting back into it. Probably in a couple of weeks, we'll do another one. I would guess either just before Election Day or just after, we will have another video town hall. So hang tight for that. But this report that we get through a company called Natixis, because Natixis is an investment company that provides us with two things. One's called the coronavirus dashboard. The other is an economic activity tracker. And one of the things that I've found, just hanging out with friends, talking with colleagues, or even just watching TV, is the information that we get through the news channels, social media, et cetera, generally revolves around our own bubble, the community that we live in, the influences that we see. And we might hear about the fact that the Wisconsin or the Midwest is seeing an increase in coronavirus cases. And we've also seen a slight increase here in Massachusetts. But is an increase in Massachusetts nearly as dangerous as an increase in Wisconsin? You know, sometimes we don't know all that information. We don't know what it all means. But one of the things that I get in this report is this global outbreak report. It not only looks at each state and how their coronavirus cases are increasing, but some of the things that we don't hear about, and that's how the virus is reacting and coming back in other countries. You know, right now, the daily increase in France, in Spain, and in the UK is dramatic, far more dramatic than what's happening here in the United States. From a number standpoint, no, but from a percentage standpoint, it's huge. But is that being reported to you? No, why not? Because you know what? We as Americans are somewhat snobby. We don't watch BBC. We don't listen to world news. We want to know what's happening in our own backyard. But the increase in numbers that we're seeing right now, Italy is starting to see another increase. Spain is, like I said, South Korea saw a spike in August and it's begun to drop down. But some of the others that are seeing the big spikes, take a look at what Russia is doing. Russia is almost beyond the peak of where they were back in March. Iran passing the peak of where they were in March. India climbing like crazy. So despite the fact that we don't feel like we're getting anywhere here in America, there's a lot bigger issues that are happening outside of the United States. But we're not finding time in our news reports or in our social media feeds to even care about that. It's all about me. It's all about us. How is that going to impact me? And actually, all things considered, we're doing better overall. We have more technology and more tools and more treatments and more understanding of this virus so that when people do get sick, the hospitalization rates are not spiking dramatically. The ICU cases are not spiking dramatically. And that's why our stock market is hanging on, why it's doing well, why you're seeing more and more people going out. Now, we need to keep wearing masks. We need to wash our hands. We need to be safe for not only ourselves, but for others as well. How our president seemed to manage to spread this virus to so many people is, well, we can guess a thousand different ways, but he's one person who's spread viruses. Others have around this country as well. But as a nation, we're actually doing far better than nations all around this world. So it's something that I'm optimistic about. The third report that comes in this coronavirus report that I share with so many of our clients when we do our town hall meetings is this thing that is called a state case heat map. And so what this is it's a big square that shows the colors red, white, and blue. Red for dangerous, white for getting better, blue for really good. And it lists all 50 states down the left-hand side. And it looks at every week, going all the way back to March. And it shows when we were in a red zone, what states were in a red zone, what states were in a white zone, and what states were in a blue zone, where we're getting better and where we're doing poorly. Well, I think it's interesting that just 60 days ago, there was the reports that Arizona and Florida were really, really doing poorly. And believe it or not, right now, as of the 27th of September, so a week ago, Arizona is having the best report on coronavirus cases right now, showing the greatest improvement, showing the greatest blue lines. So is Florida. Massachusetts continues to stay up top, but right now, consistently, Montana, Wyoming, Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Arkansas continue to be the hot spots right now. But the big populated states, New York, New Jersey, Florida, California, Georgia, Maryland, Massachusetts, and Connecticut, and Texas seem to be all doing better. That's good to see, folks. That's good to see. We're heading in a better direction. I'm optimistic. You need to remain optimistic. We also need to remain safe. Wear your mask, wash your hands, and watch your surroundings. That's my advice for today. And when we get back, I'm going to share how we can tell that things are getting better by visiting our economic activity tracker provided by Natixis Investments. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
What if you could blend the classic strategies of investing with a contemporary approach to financial planning? That's what Friedman Financial can do for you. Wherever you are along your financial journey, Friedman Financial has the skills, technology, and experience to help you make smart financial decisions. Their team of certified financial planners will deliver an independent, objective, personalized plan for you. Friedman Financial, financial advice in a language you can understand.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. It's Columbus Day weekend, and I'd normally be at the Topsfield Fair, but not this weekend. That darn coronavirus is making us all continue to stay safe, and rightfully so. It would have not been a good move to be at the Topsfield Fair. I've got to believe that, but I can't wait to be back there again, and we will get back there. It looks like the NBA is starting to talk about when they may restart up their season. Commissioner Silver has said he's looking at potentially January or February or maybe even March to start up the season again because he'd love to have fans back out there. We got to get back out there, folks. Man, it is tough watching a football game and seeing nobody in the stands, isn't it? I did think it was a little odd to see the Kansas City game and see smatterings of people all throughout the Arrowhead Stadium. But, man, I want to see people getting back to being able to gather again. I want to be able to go to the theater. I can't wait for the North Shore Music Theater to reopen, but they have to do that safely, too. And theater is such a big part of my life, and I know my family's life, and I want to go to concerts. I want to see my kids sing in choirs. I want to go to school musicals. It's going to happen, folks. I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that we all take this responsibly. And if you were listening in my previous segment, I was talking about how, despite the fact that the news is scaring us, that things are worse, folks, we're not hearing about what's happening overseas. You want to talk about worse. You want to talk about worse. I was just explaining some of the numbers that I get in a report that show that the numbers and spikes right now in Iran, in Russia, in India, in Brazil, in France, in the UK are spiking like crazy. I mean, their spikes are higher than what their spikes were when they were at their highest levels of cases. We're not seeing that. We're managing better. There are hot spots, no question about it. And there will continue to be hot spots. And we need to be diligent. We need to wear our masks. We need to wash our hands and watch our surroundings. But we also need to get back to reality. And maybe we just need to do it a little bit differently. We can still go out there. There's more and more cars on the streets. The parking lots are starting to fill up. People are spending money, as evidenced by a consumer spending heat map that I get from an economic activity tracker that is provided to me every week. And I wanted to tell you something. So this economic activity tracker that I get from a company called Natixis, which also comes from a resource called Factius, F-A-C-T-E-U-S, breaks down spending into four categories: either retail spending, entertainment spending, travel spending, or healthcare. And what it shows is year over year, how much have things dropped off back when we were first experiencing the coronavirus, and which items have improved. Well, interestingly, general merchandise, meaning being able to go to stores, dropped 33% year over year in March and into April. But ultimately, they've started to reopen. They were up a little bit in May, up even more in June. And right now, general merchandise sales are up higher, 40% higher than what they were doing last year. Discount stores are up 50% higher than what they were doing this year as of this past week. Department stores are up 16%. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you walked into the store to buy it, but these firms, these retail stores, have found ways to reimagine the way that they can deliver product to you, whether it's online, whether it's curbside pickup. And get this, during the early part of the coronavirus, wholesale clubs like Costco and BJ's, their sales were off a little bit because everybody was shut down for a few weeks. But the minute we reopened, it allowed people to go to Costco back in April and May. Their sales were up 30% greater than where they were a year ago. And as of last week, wholesale clubs on average are seeing spending up 56% more than where they were last year. But now let's move to the entertainment sector. Well, I think we all know that amusement parks basically were at negative 90% in March and April. And they've stayed at down 70, down 80% from last year almost until, I don't know, August or into September. Right now, amusement parks still, as of last week, are seeing business down 60% than what it was last year. Movie theaters. Who's going to movie theaters? A few of them have tried to open up, but most movie theaters have remained closed. So they were down 100% from March up through July and into August. And suddenly, summer's starting to open up. They're still down 85%. But you know what's up dramatically? Up dramatically, video game sales. How many kids or how many people do you know that have been relying on video games to keep themselves busy? You can now download these things. You don't even have to go to a GameStop. You can download it directly to your PlayStation or your Xbox. Video game sales are seeing 100% better sales than what they were before. In fact, the video game market has become the hottest sector from a consumer spending standpoint all throughout the coronavirus. But interestingly also is the travel sector. And one of the reports that I get, I love this report because it tracks TSA travel. So we know that back in March, of course, when airlines were basically shut down for a while, TSA travel was down close to 100%. It was basically shut down. Now, when we were at full capacity a year ago, today, compared to full capacity a year ago, we are up 35% right now. So not up more than where we were. We've increased 35% to zero. So we're only 35% of the way back to where we were. But folks, the number of people traveling on airplanes is increasing every single week. Now, there was a bump up the end of August and into September. And you know what that was all for? Kids going back to college, flying back to school. Dropped off a little bit, and now it's climbing back again. So people are starting to travel. And when I look at this heat map that I have in front of me, I see that airline travel, which was down close to 90% of what it was in March and April, is now only down 60%, which makes sense. We're up 40% from where we were. Airlines are down. Cruise ships, of course, they're way down. They're not even traveling. But what's interesting, what we're seeing right now, hotels, lodging. Lodging was down 70 to 80% in April and May. But people are starting to go back to hotels. In fact, lodging, if we look at lodging overall is down just 12% year over year. Now, many people who are listening to this show who run nice hotels in downtown Boston or run resorts in areas, yeah, you're seeing your numbers down. You're probably still at only 40 or 50% occupancy. But many of the budget hotels, many of the hotel stays where you go for a day or two, you're in and out, people are staying at these places. I went to Rochester, New York. And when I checked in, I asked, because I'm a regular Marriott guy, I asked if I was eligible, if there were any upgrades available. And they said, I'm sorry, Mr. Friedman, we are full for the night. Full for the night. I thought they were going to tell me that there was nobody staying in the hotel, but they were full. Over the summer, I stayed at a Marriott just on the other side of Buzzards Bay. And when I asked about an upgrade, they said, I'm sorry, Mr. Friedman, we're full for the night. So people are traveling at different types of hotels. Try to get a place to stay up in the mountains right now. Go to Vermont, go to New Hampshire, go to Maine to go leaf peeping. The hotels are sold out. And if you can get one, it's probably $1,000 a night. So lodging is improving. It's just different types of lodging. So I've found these reports extraordinarily interesting, and they provide an interesting perspective to people that follow this. It's really amazing to see how retail traffic, how are people driving? I mean, you can see the number of people that are driving more and more in different segments around the country. Are people driving more in the Midwest than they are in the Northeast? Take a look. Here's another report that I have in front of me that shows the Open Table. You know what Open Table is? That app that you can go to on your phone that shows the number of people that are using Open Table to make reservations. Well, of course, Open Table shut down to next to nothing because restaurants were shut down for a few months. But Open Table every single week is seeing an increase in the number of people making reservations at restaurants. Right now, it is down 40% from where they were a year ago, rather than 100% from where they were in April. So restaurants are coming back. I think you're starting to see something that's very exciting, that business owners are being entrepreneurial. They're being resourceful and creative. They're coming up with ways to bring the customer back. They never imagined that takeout business would be as big as it has been for their restaurants. And so they're now having to manage takeout with inviting customers back into their restaurant, both indoors and outdoors. And by having many restaurants having outdoor seating, restaurants are finding that they're busier than ever before between takeout, the number of people that they can serve indoors, and the number of people they can serve outdoors. Now, as the winter weather comes, That's going to get challenging. So we will see if we behave ourselves, if we wear our masks and wash our hands and watch our surroundings, perhaps we can start to fight this virus a little bit more and find ways for us to put more people inside. Because those tents, well, you can put a heater inside the tent. They're not built for a snowstorm. And once the snowstorm comes, all bets are off on that outdoor seating. So folks, we got to work together. We've got to do our very best. We have to be careful. We have to be diligent, but we can't. And unfortunately, I know you don't like the fact that the president says this, but we can't be scared of this virus. We have to be mindful of the virus. And we have to do what we can to mitigate our ability to catch this virus or transmit it to somebody else. But we have to go on. Just as when the planes went through the towers on 9/11, we said we were going to be mindful. We were going to watch our surroundings. We were going to be, point out people who were not following the rules. But we were going to do our best as a country to bring us back, to make us better. And that's what we can do to continue to get this economy going. To me, folks, it doesn't matter who will be the next president of the United States. Whether it's Joe Biden or Donald Trump, at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to matter. I do think that it'll matter if Joe Biden wins and the Democrats win the Senate. I don't think that's going to happen. I believe right now, as of this week, and that's not what I predicted a few months ago, my prediction is that that Joe Biden will win this election. But I'd like to also believe that the Republicans will hold on to the Senate. But what do I know? I'm just another guy. I'm just taking in information just like you are. I try to rationally listen to a lot of people, and I'm one that embraces the perspectives that a lot of folks have. I think we need to be more open-minded about a lot of stuff and stop passing such quick judgment on a lot of the messages that we see through a headline and through a quote, because oftentimes they're misinterpreted. And we need to understand, what do you really mean by that? What were they really talking about? Not us trying to interpret it ourselves, but really trying to ask, tell me more about what you mean about that. And that's what I'm going to ask you when you come in for a financial planning review, when we're looking at your investment portfolio, when we're trying to understand your whole financial life. I'm going to ask you some questions. What does retirement look like? What do you hope to spend when you retire? And tell me more about what you mean by that. When you say, I want to travel, what does travel look like? What does helping your children look like? What does that cost? What do you imagine it will be? Where do you imagine living when you're 70 or 80 or 90 years old? Do you plan to dote on your grandchildren? Do you plan to help pay for their costs for college? Or is it going to be up to them? And my big question that I ask of couples as they're approaching retirement and they realize that they did a nice job raising their kids, they worked hard, they cohabitated in their home, but now the nest is empty. They're not having to go back to work anymore. I ask them the question, what is it that the two of you enjoy doing together? And eating out can't be the only answer. Think about that. How would you answer that question? That's what I call financial advice in a language you can understand. And that's going to do it for us today. If you'd like our newsletter, a free newsletter called Planning Pointers, go to our website, freedmanfinancial.com. Put at the bottom of any page, put in your email address, your name, and you'll start getting our newsletter at Friday, 10:30 in the morning, and join the 7,000 subscribers that are already signed up. And if you'd like to schedule a free initial consultation to visit with us, or to even talk with us via Zoom or over the phone, go to our website, freedmanfinancial.com, or call my office, 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. And that's going to do it for us today. Have a great day. I'll be back again next Sunday with more financial advice in a language you can understand. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Thanks for tuning into Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. During the show, specific investments may have been discussed. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Please consult a certified financial planner, tax professional, or attorney to determine what is appropriate for you.
Consider your investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of an investment company before investing. That's because investing involves risk, including a loss of principal. A prospectus contains this and other information about mutual funds, variable annuities, and variable annuity subaccounts. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making an investment. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment and financial planning advice is offered through Mark's firm, Friedman Financial, which is a registered investment advisor and a separate entity from LPL. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next Sunday at 8 a.m.
The prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.